Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's easy to get small-d depressed when you come out of work at this time of year, especially right after the daylight saving change, and discover that it's dark at 5. But some people have a more serious form of depression that's associated with the changing seasons. SAD, or seasonal affective disorder, is something that maybe close to 6% of the population has to deal with. Others sometimes roll their eyes, discounting SAD as not a real form of depression. But our guest today was recently awarded a $3.4 million grant from the National Institute of Mental Health to study the disorder and what kinds of treatment actually work. Kelly Rowan is a clinical psychologist and professor at the University of Vermont who researches SAD, and she joins us today. Nice to have you with us, Professor.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So can you describe what SAD is exactly and how it's different from just being disappointed that we don't have a lot of sunlight and that it's cold?
Yeah. SAD is clinical depression. The only thing that makes it different from garden variety depression is the seasonal pattern that it follows, where the symptoms are in effect in the fall and the winter, and then they fully resolve in the spring and the summer. So it's much more than just not liking winter. I think many people in Vermont don't like winter, yet only a minority of people have full-blown clinical seasonal affective disorder.
Do more people have sort of the winter blues or this feeling of like, oh, man, I just, I feel a little bit more lethargic, that doesn't quite cross over into actual clinical depression? And are they related?
Yes, absolutely. It's on a continuum where most people are going to experience some symptoms in the fall and the winter. It's just a question of how many and how bad. So seasonal affective disorder is clinical depression. There's another group that's known as the winter blues, subclinical depression, where they have symptoms, but they don't really interfere with their ability to function. And then there's the rest of us who may notice a little bit of sluggishness in terms of our energy, maybe some changes in food preferences, sleeping a little bit more, but nothing that's going to cause any major problem in life.
So it sounds like there is a biological component for almost everybody to dealing with the changing seasons, dealing with cold weather and more darkness. There's something in all of us, our circadian rhythms or our, how we relate to the world around us that can make us feel different at this time of year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the assumption is that it's a slow-running biological clock. We have melatonin, the hormone of darkness. It rises at night. This helps us feel sleepy. It falls in the morning to help us wake up. But as dawns are happening later and later, in the winter, that biological clock can get what's called out of phase, where it's like a slow-running biological clock. It's assumed that all people at a high latitude experience this, but people with seasonal affective disorder experience it to an extreme.
Is there some biological benefit to that? I mean, why haven't we evolved out of having to feel that?
Well, there is some research to show people with seasonal affective disorder may not have evolved out of this. It's very difficult and expensive, it turns out, to measure melatonin. You have to put people in dim light conditions and take a sample of blood or saliva every 30 minutes. People with SAD, their bodies are making melatonin about 30 minutes more in the winter than they are in the summer, whereas people without SAD don't show the seasonal difference. The seasonal difference that people with SAD do show is just like what we see in circadian mammals, like sheep, mammals that are really in tune with light-dark cycles because it tells them when to forage for food, when to procreate, those kinds of things. So the hypothesis is people with SAD may be more like these photoperiodic mammals and tracking the seasons in this way through their biology.
Which is kind of cool, although it certainly doesn't feel that way if you're affected by it.
Certainly does not. Even a 30-minute difference in how long your body is making melatonin could be enough to produce some pretty significant energy problems, sleep shifts. And then the assumption is the other pieces of depression kind of trickle in response to that.
So tick through some of the symptoms for us. I know you said it's depression, but it's triggered by the season. So just, what might people be experiencing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty significant depressed mood, feeling down, melancholy, blue much of the time, feeling a loss of interest in things that the person usually genuinely likes to do and gets a sense of enjoyment out. There's this, I call it going into a withdrawal state, a hibernation state, and people who have a seasonal affective disorder, they cut themselves off from things. Feeling guilty, feeling worthless, thoughts of death or suicide, difficulty concentrating, feeling tired. That one seems to be the universal symptom. I have never met someone with seasonal affective disorder that doesn't experience fatigue. Huh. In theory, they could exist, but they've not come across my desk or my research studies yet anyways. So that seems to be the universal symptom. Significant change in appetite, eating a lot more or a lot less, usually weight follows suit, and it's usually in the direction of eating a lot more carbohydrate-rich foods, packing on the pounds, and the sleep symptoms could be sleeping a lot more, sleeping a lot less. It usually is the sleeping a lot more, and it's a lot more. I've talked to people that take significant naps. They go to bed much earlier. They sleep much later in the morning. So it's not just a mild difference. The people that have this, it's at least an hour more, often many more hours in the winter sleeping than relative to the summer.
You hear about it, and at least when we first started hearing about SAD as it was sort of coming into the popular psyche, it was seen as this sort of boutique disorder or not real. It's like, oh, everybody gets the winter blues. This isn't a real thing. Come on. Or, you have too much time and money on your hands if you're being diagnosed with SAD. But that's not the case.
It's not the case. It's true that the symptoms may be more mild than in depression that's not seasonal. But when you think about the average SAD episode lasts 5 months of the year and that it strikes every year, total time in depression in terms of the cumulative effect that it would take on a person's life is pretty significant to be depressed 5 months of each year. So unfortunately, what you just said still exists, where I'll get this at conferences. Why are you studying that? It's
you
not
will,
important.
You do?
Huh. It's a boutique disorder where it's just not as interesting or not as severe. My response is always, look at the cumulative effect on the person's life. That's pretty significant impairment.
When does it start? I mean, we're in November now, and we've all just experienced that one-hour shift. And, you sort of start to think about it at this time of year. But when did the onset of symptoms start for people who are dealing with this?
They start to trickle in generally in September. But this particular weekend, when we move the clocks, is a big cue for a lot of people in terms of when they notice the symptoms suddenly getting a lot worse.
Really?
We've all experienced this phenomenon. We will come out of work today and it will be dark, whereas that was not the case perhaps on Friday. So the time change is a really big trigger for a lot of people.
So really that change, that falling back really does make people feel different, or at least lets them realize it or notice that this is the moment.
Yes. And again, the majority of people who have winter depression sleep too much. So they were probably sleeping through that extra hour of daylight that we allegedly got in the morning. It's only beneficial if you're awake to enjoy it, right? But what they will notice coming out of work today is that it's dark, whereas that was not the case on the Friday before.
So do people who live around the equator not experience this at all, where you're always having 12 hours of daylight and 12 hours of darkness?
There are at least some cases who cannot outrun their SAD, no matter how far south they go. And I've been in this business long enough to have worked with people that move. I've had people go to Mexico. They move as far south as they can go. And for many people, this will eliminate the symptoms. But there's a very famous case, a guy by the name of Kern. His last name was Kern, first name Herb, the first SAD patient ever diagnosed and treated with light therapy.
What year was this?
This was about 1985. Moved as far south as he could get, at least staying in the United States, went to southern Florida, and still experienced the depressive episodes.
Why is that then?
I think it's just that biological component. Again, if you have this vulnerability to a slow-running biological clock, it's probably going to run its course. Now, for many people, it will work, this sort of relocation therapy, which I don't advocate for, by the way. Most of us live in Vermont because there's good reason to live here, right? We have social networks and families and jobs that keep us here. But some people certainly get that desperate where they look to make a major move.
But people who are born and spend their lives in either these, sort of climates right around the equator, or alternatively, ones who are living in places where you see even greater darkness at the winter months than we do. Do you see in native populations different degrees to which the population experiences this disorder?
Yes, absolutely. At least in the United States, there is a pretty nice correlation with latitude. The further away from the equator you get in our country, the more cases of SAD you'll see. Yet it does exist. In southern Florida, the prevalence is estimated to be about 1%, whereas in Alaska and Nashua, New Hampshire, it's estimated to be in the range of 9 to 10%. So we've got a really nice positive correlation, at least here in the United States, with latitude. So there is something about photo period, day length, that's believed to be the big trigger to these episodes.
Is this studied in other countries too, or is this something that's typically treated and discussed in the United States?
Most of the research has been in the United States, Canada, and Europe. So whether or not, you know, this latitude effect generalizes as well to, let's say, the southern hemisphere, it's not as clear. In meta-analyses that try to consolidate data and get an overall handle on things across studies, the relationship with latitude is most clear in our country and less clear in other places, including Europe.
D. Lights PD says, is there a connection between SAD and lack of sunshine? Are people who stay indoors all day more likely to suffer from SAD? And similarly, Kristen on our Facebook page has a similar question, who writes, what can you say about the people who must work two or more jobs and hence are inside more than those with free time?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. Certainly, photo period day length is the most robust predictor of when the symptoms begin and how bad they are on any given day. However, if we're inside, we're not really taking advantage of the light that is available to us, right? I've worked with a lot of people over the years who are in offices without windows, and it seems to exacerbate their symptoms, those indoor conditions that don't allow for enough light. I always recommend people get outside as much as they can, as long as they're not terribly averse to cold, to take advantage of the light. And there's plenty of good light to be had in the winter, especially when we have snow on the ground. It reflects. You can get perhaps more photons hitting your retina on a clear winter day with snow on the ground than you can on some summer days, even.
And that helps. I mean, being outside, being in the sunlight when it's there is helpful. It's not just about how much daylight there is. It's actually about the quality of the light that you're getting and how much of it you're actually getting into your body.
Yeah, you can get more light naturally outside than you can get from a light box. Light boxes are generally 10,000 lux. Outside on a clear day, you can get 100,000 lux. So taking a walk first thing in the morning after the sun comes out, you're actually getting just as much, if not more, light doing that than you are using light therapy. And you're outside getting fresh air, and you're getting the benefit of physical activity, assuming you're moving your body, you're taking a walk or doing a jog during that time.
We got a note from Citizen Jones in Mansfield who says, even if our acute symptoms don't rise to the level of gaining medical attention, we're all exposed to streetlights, screens, and indoor lighting. The unnaturalness of it all is only getting worse since the invention of the blue LED. What can you say about SAD and all of the other problems caused by our over-illuminated built environment?
Interesting. Well, I'm sure that this caller is probably aware that there's some evidence that these devices are interfering with our sleep in terms of the light that they give off. Sleep is one significant component, one of the main symptoms of seasonal affective disorder. So I always encourage my patients that I work with to put those devices in another room to make sure that their sleeping environment is really dark, so that we do get restful, continuous sleep and we're not distracted by these lights. No one has directly studied this in seasonal affective disorder, to my knowledge, but I think the same sleep issues that we're observing in other populations are happening in this population with regard to these devices.
We got a note from Ian who says, I was hiking every weekend in the White Mountains since July. On Saturday, I lay in bed for 2 hours watching the rain drip on the roof. Sunday, when the sun came out, I immediately hopped out of bed for a short hike and found a warm rock to lay on in the sun until it got too cold to not move. I'm going to start talking with a counselor, Ian says. So is that, you know, you sort of see your own behavior, that might be a sign that you're affected by this, and that's a time to start thinking about talking to someone?
Yeah, if you see your habits change as we're transitioning into winter, particularly in this way, having these interests that are antidepressant, it sounds like. This caller really enjoys hiking and experiences great enjoyment from that. So when you notice yourself beginning to stop doing those things that are the natural antidepressants for you, that's a signal that you might want to seek a consultation. And I really encourage people not to try to figure this out on their own. This is what mental health professionals are for. You wouldn't try to diagnose and treat, for the most part, your own medical conditions. And mental health problems are the same way. There are some conditions that can overlap with seasonal affective disorder, so make sure you got the diagnosis just right and explore your treatment options under the supervision of someone who has the training to do it.
Is this something that people typically notice early on in their lives, or can there be a sudden onset of SAD? I mean, if you've lived in this environment your whole life and gone through, you know, 34 or 47 winters, does it just sometimes appear?
Well, basically anything is possible. I've been working in the field long enough and with enough people that I have seen the sort of textbook presentation, which is, gosh, I've noticed I've always had this pattern dating all the way back to adolescence. The peak age of onset is in the early 20s. If there's going to be depression, that's when it tends to begin. But then there's some people who've always been fine with the winter, and sometimes it's a sort of life event where maybe they're now retired and their work used to keep them busy, but now there's nothing to take the place of that and the vulnerability kicks in. So there is no one size fits all in terms of age of onset. Certainly when people move north from southern locations, they could have a sudden onset of this type of depression.
Do you notice demographic differences, male to female, you know, age differences, socioeconomic differences? I mean, is there a profile of a SAD sufferer?
Overwhelmingly women. It's at least the 2-to-1 gender difference that we see in non-seasonal depression, if not higher. Most of the research suggests it may be closer to 4-to-1 women to men with seasonal depression.
Why do you think?
Why are women more vulnerable? Women are more vulnerable to depression, period. So seasonal depression in particular, it's widely reported and not very well explained. One of the factors that makes women more vulnerable to depression in general is that women tend to ruminate when they feel sad, which is to think repetitively over and over again, why do I feel this way? What does it mean that I feel this way? It's very unproductive thinking, kind of wallowing in one's depression. And the more we ruminate, the more depressed we get. People who ruminate are more likely to develop a depressive episode. People with SAD who ruminate a lot in the fall have worse symptoms the following winter. So I think there's at least some role for rumination in explaining the gender difference.
It would be hard not to. If you knew that you were going to start feeling depressed and being clinically depressed, I mean, really, this affecting your daily life as soon as the weather and the daylight starts to change, it would be hard not to see August as a really difficult month. Do people who are affected by SAD find themselves feeling bad earlier than the shifts in the daylight might suggest?
Yes. My phone will start ringing at the end of August. And there's not enough provocation in the environment yet. The days are still plenty long. We're still having summer-like weather here. What I notice is a peak in state anxiety. I'm freaking out.
Yeah.
It's coming. Summer's coming to a close. Winter's on the horizon. People escalate in their anxiety level, which is really interesting, I think, but makes perfect sense. If you know you have this pattern, you learn that you have this pattern, you come to expect the symptoms.
Yeah, boy, it would be really difficult not to start feeling it for longer than your sort of physical symptoms would manifest just because you're expecting it. I mean, that must be a really difficult part of it. Let's go to Stacy, who's calling in from Morrisville. Hi, Stacy. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question about sunglasses. I never use them, and I'm always telling people that do that they're blocking the light that their eyes need to, you know, be healthy and happy. And I just wonder if I'm giving good advice or what.
Stacy, thanks for the call. Kelly Rowan?
Well, in the summer, I think it's good advice to wear the sunglasses. However, if you're on board with what I said earlier, that there's plenty of natural light to be had, we just need to get out there and take advantage of it. As long as you don't have any retinal pathology that an ophthalmologist would say you need certain protection, it probably is in your best interest to go ahead and take those glasses off if you're going to be out for that 30-minute walk first thing in the morning. After the sun rises, to try to get as many photons as you possibly can hitting your retina, if that's an important part of mood, which it is for a lot of people that suffer from this and more mild forms of seasonal affective disorder.
So it matters whether the sunlight is getting into your eyes and not just sort of bathing over your whole body?
Right, because it's really through the eye that the light projects to the biological clock in the brain that helps to regulate these circadian rhythms. For example, when I'm coaching people to use light therapy, one of the instructions is you need to take your sunglasses off while you're doing it, or else you're going to defeat the purpose. We want the light to hit your retina. So it would be true in natural light as well, that we'd want that light to make contact with the retina.
Well, let's talk about light therapy, because you've talked about the importance of going outside and getting natural light, but there are all kinds of ways that people will tell you to get more light into your life if you're affected by this, or even if you have subclinical seasonal depression. So is there a value in having light therapy?
There absolutely is. It's a highly effective treatment for winter depression, the most studied treatment. Really large effect sizes favoring that light therapy is better than other kinds of controls that have been used, including placebo light boxes in these studies. So there's no question it's a really beneficial treatment. It has strong antidepressant effects. Light therapy does require daily compliance. And remember, the average sad episode lasts 5 months of the year. So it's not a treatment for everybody in terms of being willing to commit to a daily treatment that's at least 30 minutes a day.
And what do you do when you're getting light therapy? I feel like I remember from, 10 years ago, something where you were supposed to put it behind your knees because your skin is thinner behind your knees. So how are you actually doing light therapy if you're doing it?
I think that that research has been disqualified. No one could ever replicate that finding that you're alluding to. With light therapy for winter depression, again, the target is the retina. Mm-hmm. So with these units, the person is sitting in front of it, facing it, not staring at it, or they're just going to see spots. So you're a little bit limited. You can be on your iPhone. You can have other small electronic devices, but you really need to be within the appropriate distance to get that maximum amount of light to the retina.
And is the only downside if it's not something that you're able to commit 30 minutes a day to, or are there other risks or downsides to this idea?
Yeah, so the burden of the time is one piece, but in addition, there are side effects. I think this is something the lay public perhaps does not realize with light therapy, that it can involve side effects. Usually mild things such as getting headaches, a little bit of eye strain, feeling a bit jittery or wound up, almost like you've had too much caffeine when you're starting light therapy. Usually these are mild and they dissipate with continued use of light therapy. But because of these side effects, I always recommend getting started in light therapy under the supervision of a provider who knows something about the relationship between circadian rhythms and mood. Because there's the potential to induce a lot of side effects, shift sleep around, potentially make some of the symptoms worse if you're shooting in the dark and trying to do this on your own. The dosing of light therapy is something that it would be very difficult for a layperson to navigate. And what I mean by dose is how many minutes a day do you need to use it? And at what time or times of day do you individually need to use it? Because there's no one size fits all in terms of getting the dose just right, where the mood is as good as it can be and the side effects are minimized as much as they can be.
Does that go for natural light too, though? I mean, it seems like a strange thing to be talking about dosing for a light box when, you know, I'm not dosing if I'm outside all day on Saturday and then inside all day on Sunday.
Right. It's true. I regard light therapy, however, as medical devices, even though they are not FDA regulated, which is interesting, and perhaps they should be. So if we're trying to tweak that circadian clock and put it back into a different position, more like it is in the summertime, the timing of it is really important in terms of that self-administered dose of light therapy they're getting first thing in the morning. Exactly what time does that need to occur? For how many minutes does that need to occur?
Let's go to Heather, who's calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Heather. What are your thoughts today?
Hi. Well, first of all, I really appreciate the practitioner that you have there. I feel like she's spot on with, like, I have SAD really bad. And I'm wanting to ask, I've tried light therapy and doesn't seem to work. I've worked outside as a ski instructor most of my life, and that makes it a little bit better. When I'm here in Vermont, I grew up here in Vermont ski racing. When I go out to the Rocky Mountains, I don't even get it. But I'm wondering, And I don't want to try pills because of the side effects, but I'm wondering what else I could do in Vermont besides exercise outside in the light box, mm-hmm. or if there is anything.
Yeah, well, we are running trials at the University of Vermont and have been for about 20 years now to test a kind of talk therapy that's called cognitive behavioral therapy, a tried and true psychotherapy treatment for depression. It's just applying it to this form to try to teach new ways of thinking and new ways of behaving in the winter to promote better coping with this time of year. So of the things that you've listed, that sounds like it's a novel one. Now, the caller said, I've tried light therapy, but I wonder, have you really tried it the way that I'm talking about it, like working with a professional to try to get the dose just right, to try to minimize those side effects? Because going online and purchasing a light box, and first of all, there's a wide variety in terms of what's available. It's a real cottage industry. So is the choice even effective device like those that have been used in clinical trials? And then navigating that trial error process of trying to get the dose just right. So if light therapy has been tried on one's own, it probably doesn't replicate this kind of process that I'm talking about. So there might still be some benefit there.
And are therapists and counselors well-versed in this? I mean, if I went to someone and said, I'd like to try light therapy, are they going to look at me like, yeah, okay, what do you want me to do about it? Or is this something that's now a part of, you know, helping people who have seasonal depression?
Mm-hmm. There's real variability there is the short answer to that. I think that most psychiatrists are relatively comfortable. Psychologists vary a lot in their level of comfort. Even primary care providers, some of them feel comfortable supervising light therapy and making these dose adjustments, and others don't. So you just have to ask, you know, is this in your repertoire? The term is chronotherapeutics, understanding the relationship between circadian rhythms and mental health. If somebody is well-versed in chronotherapeutics, then they're probably going to be a good supervisor of a light therapy treatment. And if not, they should be able to refer you to someone who is.
Let's go to Lynette calling in from Greensboro Bend. Hi, Lynette. You're on the air.
Hi. Oh, boy. I moved up to Greensboro 18 years ago. In August, and when November came, I'd never seen a month with only one day of sunshine, and I was a complete disaster for the rest of the winter. I had no idea what was going on. I got a light box, you know, on my own. I tried that, and the one thing my sister and I have both found that's incredibly helpful, we had ourselves tested for vitamin D level. And we were both lacking greatly. And I, once it starts getting near dark time, I up my vitamin D quite a bit. I double it, I guess. And it's been, I can manage things now. I still maybe sleep really late, but the vitamin D has really, really helped. I don't know if there's any scientific information about that, but that would be my suggestion.
Well, Lynette, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate that. What about vitamin D? I mean, we know there's a connection, right, between vitamin D and the sun. So mm-hmm. can that be an effective treatment?
Yeah, so this comes up all the time. The reason we don't think that vitamin D is causal is that most of us at this latitude, if we went to our primary care and got the test that this caller just described getting, would come out as vitamin D deficient. It's just kind of a fact of living this far north. So if vitamin
really?
D were causal in seasonal affective disorder, we'd all have it, right? It wouldn't just be 7 to 8% of us estimated in Vermont that would have the full-blown clinical version of this problem. I'm not going to, however, dispute anyone who's doing something that they say is helpful for them, by all means, as long as it's not a harmful treatment, keep doing it. Probably let your doctor know that you're doing it, especially if it's increasing the dose beyond what's recommended.
But generally speaking, starting to take a large dose of vitamin D at this time of year isn't going to help. Hasn't been shown to be a helpful treatment.
Right. There's really no evidence for that. I don't know of anyone in this field who would use vitamin D as a standalone treatment for dealing with these problems. The frontline treatments are generally antidepressant medications, bright light therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy.
Rich is calling from Glens Falls, New York. Hey, Rich, go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I think you may have answered my question in the past few minutes, but I was wondering, just out of curiosity, if someone can't see light, for example, a blind person or someone who doesn't have a retina because their eyes have been injured and they've been removed, can they experience sad, or do you have to visibly see light in order for these effects to happen?
That's a great question. There's at least one study looking at the prevalence of seasonal affective disorder in blind individuals. It turns out they can have it as long as they have their eyeballs, as long as they've not been enucleated. So the deal is there are still photoreceptors in the retina. They're not rods and cones. They're melanopsin-containing cells. And even visually blind people have these. This melanopsin is a protein in the retina, but it's completely unrelated to vision. So there's still a way that light could strike those melanopsin-containing cells and send a signal to the biological clock to regulate their rhythms.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it?
So we got a note from Dan who says, I'm a lifetime Vermonter and a sad sufferer. It's getting worse for me as the years pass. I've been using high doses of vitamin D and light therapy, but they don't seem to help. Is there a study I can roll in to possibly help with this cause? And Kelly Rohn, you mentioned a study a moment ago. So can people actually get involved in this cognitive behavioral therapy study?
If you're willing to come to the University of Vermont in Burlington, we are recruiting for a clinical trial right now, where we're comparing light therapy to cognitive behavioral therapy. We're looking for 160 community adults who have SAD to participate. They'll get one of these two treatments. And then we follow people for 2 years because we're really interested in the long-term effects of treatments that we're testing. Particularly, do these treatments offset recurrence in the future? I, of course, love the idea of treating people across 6 weeks if I can improve their symptoms. But I'm even more excited if somebody comes back a year later and they're no longer experiencing SAD. That's an even better outcome to me.
And is this what the money from the National Institute of Mental Health is going towards?
This is, yes. This is actually the third study in this programmatic line of research along the same lines where we're testing these two treatments. In the new study, we're trying to understand what's happening in the body across the course of an effective treatment, because that's really what the National Institute of Mental Health wants to understand right now.
And do you suffer from SAD? What got you interested in this?
I got interested in this because I was a graduate student at the University of Maine in Orono, working in a depression lab. And we had so many people to study in the fall and the winter, but not so much in the spring and the summer. You could hear crickets in the lab. And it was interesting because it would be the same study with the same recruitment, the same procedures. I noticed the seasonal ebb and flow and thought, I'm going to start studying this. I don't suffer from SAD, but I find it to be fascinating.
Well, I appreciate you helping us understand it better and understanding some of the treatments and how they might work and the value of actually doing this with a professional who can help you. So thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Kelly Rohn is a clinical psychologist and a professor at the University of Vermont. She researches seasonal affective disorder, and we have links, including one to the study that she was talking about recruiting for, at our website, vpr.net. Just click on Vermont Edition.